Next year, Business Wars is going even bigger. Starting January 5th, we'll be bringing you new, longer episodes every Wednesday with even more inside stories on the most outrageous and intense corporate rivalries of all time. This episode originally aired in 2019. It's summer 1965, and in the conference room inside the windowless headquarters of the Hershey Chocolate Company, new CEO Harold Mahler has news for his top team. The executives stare at their stocky leader with his neat, contoured hair. He looks worried.
I got a letter from Mars this morning. They're starting to make their own chocolate and will stop using ours over the next few years.
The executives are stunned.
Why would they do that? That's crazy. It'll be more expensive for them to make chocolate than to buy it from us.
Another executive nods in agreement.
It'll cost them, what, around $20 million just to start production? They won't recoup that investment for years.
But what the Hershey team doesn't get is that Forrest Mars isn't thinking about next year, or even the next five. The Mars company's head honcho is thinking long-term. Forrest also knows that he can't launch an all-out attack on Hershey if he depends on them for chocolate. But there's another, more immediate reason to do it, too. Mahler turns to Hershey's chief accountant.
How much will losing Mars business cost us? We're looking at losing 10, maybe 20% of our annual revenue.
The executives gasp. They knew Mars was a big customer, but they always thought Mars needed them more than they needed Mars. Mahler tries to stay positive.
Maybe this is a good thing. Supplying other companies with chocolate is a distraction. You know, stops us focusing on the consumer market. Maybe this is the push we need to wind down that side of the business.
But the truth is, Mahler's deeply worried. Since Forrest took charge last Christmas, Mars has gone dark. It no longer attends trade shows. It doesn't speak to the press. And it's withdrawn from the National Confectioners Association. Mahler doesn't know what Forrest's up to, but he knows in his gut it can't be good. For the first time ever, the Hershey Chocolate Company feels vulnerable.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. On the last episode, Forrest Mars took control of Mars and united it with M&M's and his European candy business food manufacturers. Now, he's out to wrench America's candy bar crown from Hershey. This is Episode 4, Mars Attacks.
It's 1965, and there's a new face wandering the corridors of the Hershey Chocolate Company. His name's John Raleigh, and he's just been hired to lead the marketing department, a department that, so far, consists of just him. He's the company's first ever head of marketing. Hershey CEO Harold Mahler brought Raleigh in to help fend off the threat from Mars. But first, Raleigh's got to build a marketing department from scratch. And to do that, he needs information. Raleigh heads into the office of a sales manager. The salesman has been with Hershey for decades and is nearing retirement.
"Hey there, I'm John Raleigh, the new head of marketing."
The salesman looks puzzled.
"Marketing? What's that?"
Raleigh sighs. Almost everyone in Hershey asks him the same question.
"It's about using product, price, packaging, and promotion to get people buying our chocolate."
"Don't we do that already?"
"Not really. Let me put it another way. You sell candy bars into stores, right?"
"Uh-huh."
"Well, my job, the job of marketing, is to get those candy bars into people's shopping baskets and out of the stores."
"Sounds like an easy job. Our products sell themselves."
"Well, anyway, I'm after a copy of this year's sales targets. You have them?"
The salesman grins.
"Oh, that's easy enough."
The salesman spins around in his office chair to face the metal filing cabinet behind his desk. He opens a drawer, flicks through the folders, and triumphantly pulls out a sheet of yellowing paper.
"Here you are."
Raleigh stares at the document in disbelief. It's a one-line memo that says, "Increase sales 4% every year." Raleigh checks the date. The memo's 11 years old.
"Is this really the latest sales target you've got?"
"Yep. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?"
If there's any hope of revamping this fossil of a company, Raleigh knows he needs to bring in outsiders. It's 1966, and Jack Dowd's laying on the bed in his room at the Coco Inn Hotel in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Dowd's a Bostonian marketing executive. He used to push Canada Dry ginger ale, but tomorrow morning, he's got an interview for a job at Hershey. Dowd's not sure he wants to be Hershey's marketing manager, but he's intrigued by the opportunity. After all, Hershey's the only Fortune 500 company without a marketing department. He picks up the phone and calls home.
"Hey, dear, I just checked in at the hotel."
"So, what's it like?"
"The hotel?"
"No, the town, Hershey. You know, that place we're going to move to if you take this job."
"Oh, well, it's ridiculous. Get this, I'm staying at the Coco Inn, right? And that's on the corner of Coco and Chocolate Avenues. Even the damn street lights are shaped like Hershey kisses. I can't picture us here, but, well, let's see how the interview goes."
The next morning, Dowd meets Hershey CEO Harold Mahler for his final interview. Mahler leans over his desk and looks Dowd right in the eyes.
"Jack, there's something you need to understand about Hershey. We do not do advertising."
Dowd folds his arms.
"I know, but I think that's going to change."
Mahler leans back in his chair.
"And what makes you think that?" "One, your market share is falling."
Mahler nods reluctantly.
"Two, your new products don't sell as well as your old ones."
"Yes, that's true."
"Three, your products are more popular with the adults who grew up eating Hershey than with children."
Mahler looks away.
"Yeah, that's true too."
Dowd smiles.
"And that is why you're going to start advertising. The question isn't if, it's when."
Dowd gets the job. His first task is to develop a marketing plan for every single item Hershey sells. Immediately, he hits a snag. The company makes a multitude of products and sells them in every package and size imaginable. Dowd decides he needs to eliminate the products that don't sell. So, he asks for sales figures, only to discover that Hershey doesn't keep those records for individual products. He ends up hiring market researchers from Nielsen to investigate how his own company's products are selling. It's May 1967. Dowd's in an oak-paneled meeting room in Hershey headquarters, ready to hear Nielsen's findings. Right away, the lead researcher drops a bombshell.
Jack, there's a finding I want to flag. I think this is important. We found that Hershey products are out of stock 30% of the time.
Dowd groans and puts his head in his hands. For most consumer goods companies, being out of stock 10% of the time would be a disaster. Hershey's missing out on nearly a third of its potential sales because it's not keeping candy bars flowing to stores. Mars would never make that mistake. Forrest Mars expects his sales team to keep every store the company supplies fully stocked with Snickers, M&Ms, and Milky Ways at all times. And when that doesn't happen, there's hell to pay. It's 1967, and in the Chicago offices of Mars, Forrest's just returned from a trip to Virginia. He walks through the austere open-plan office and stops at the desk of marketing chief Bill Suring.
Hey, Bill, I went to a mom-and-pop store in Virginia, and guess what I found?
Bill looks up. Before Forrest took over, he enjoyed working for Mars. Now, he hates it.
Forrest, I have no idea.
Forrest leans closer.
Well, what I found in that store, Bill, was not a single Milky Way.
Forrest glances around to make sure the rest of the office is surreptitiously listening before turning back to Bill.
The thing is, Bill, you're a nice guy. A nice guy with a nice family. But you're also the dumbest son of a bitch I've ever known. You're stupid. You ought to get out of here.
Before Forrest can continue, a colleague interrupts. It's Larry Johns, the head of sales.
Forrest, sales into stores isn't Bill's responsibility. It's mine.
Forrest whips his head around to face Johns and points an accusing finger right at Johns.
Well, in that case, I should fire you as well.
Forrest doesn't carry out his threat, but Johns can see the writing on the wall. Soon after, he resigns. He's got a new job. Head of sales at Hershey. It's 1968, and Johns is in Arkansas, sitting in the passenger seat of a Hershey sales rep's Ford Galaxy. He's spending the day shadowing the rep to get a better understanding of how Hershey's sales operation works on the ground. He's curious because he knows from his time at Mars that Hershey salespeople are rarely seen in the field. So rarely that at Mars, people joke they were like Bigfoot. Rumored to exist, but there's no proof. The salesman parks and retrieves a crate of Hershey candy bars from the back seat. Johns follows as he heads toward the nearby A&P, but to John's surprise, the sales rep breezes right past the supermarket. Instead, he heads into a small convenience store and sells them his crate of candy. After leaving the store, Johns turns to the salesman.
Why didn't you go to the A&P?
There's no point. They buy everything centrally.
Sure, but you could make sure our products are in a good spot inside the store. In fact, let's do that right now.
They enter the supermarket and start hunting for chocolate. They quickly find a display of Mars candy bars in a prime spot. But there's not a Hershey bar in sight. Eventually, near the back, right by the kitty litter, they find the Hershey bars. Johns picks one up. It's dusty and past its sell-by date. Back at headquarters, Johns tells the company president, Bill Dearden, what he saw down south.
I want these salespeople fired. They haven't a clue. No wonder Mars is eating you for breakfast.
Dearden shakes his head.
I'm not doing that.
What? It's not their fault. It's ours. They're doing what we told them to do. We can't fire them for that.
As the months pass, the new marketing department uncovers more problems. Everywhere they look, they see a company so behind the times, it could be a museum. It's as if time stopped the day Milton Hershey died. And the situation's about to turn critical. For years, Hershey's sold its candy bars for a nickel, despite spiraling ingredient costs. Mars upped its prices years ago, but Hershey's holding the line by shrinking the size of its 5-cent chocolate bars. But prices are still rising, and the bars are now so thin, they can't get any smaller. So in late 1969, Mahler bows to the inevitable. He orders the first price rise in Hershey's 75-year history, from 5 cents a bar to 10 cents. To soften the blow to consumers, he doubles the size of Hershey bars. But it's not enough. Consumers have come to regard nickel Hershey bars as an enduring part of American life. The price hike sparks a backlash. Sales of Hershey bars plunge by a third. Suddenly, Hershey is in a position that would have been unthinkable just a decade ago. The company's once commanding lead over Mars has melted away. Now, Mars and Hershey are neck and neck in market share. The chocolate war is balanced on a knife edge that's tipping in favor of Mars. Mahler knows the time has come. If Hershey is to stay number one, it needs to start advertising before Mars pulls ahead.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
It's late 1969, and Hershey CEO Harold Mahler is riding the elevator in a Manhattan hotel. With him is Hershey's chief counsel and a company vice president. They're here to forge a transatlantic alliance against Mars. They exit the elevator and enter a large suite where the delegation from British candy giant Roundtree McIntosh is waiting. A small, sprightly Scotsman with receding hair bounds over to greet them. He's Donald Barron, the chairman of Roundtree McIntosh. The two teams sit on a pair of leather couches, and Barron starts negotiations.
We need a new U.S. licensee for Kit Kat. Philip Morris isn't pushing it enough. We don't want Mars because they compete with us at home. We think Hershey could be the right fit. Kit Kat's U.S. sales might be only $2 million a year now. But if you promote it right, I promise it'll outsell Hershey's almond.
Barron stares as the Hershey men try not to laugh. Kit Kat? One of America's top candies? Yeah, right. Mahler composes himself.
Donald,
I'm sorry, that was out of line. It's just that we have more modest expectations for Kit Kat. But we want the U.S. license. We need more chocolate-coated bars to counter Mars.
Over the next few hours, the teams thrash out a deal. They agree to a 30-year arrangement where Hershey will handle Kit Kat in America and pay royalties to Roundtree Macintosh. But then, Barron raises a concern.
I know you don't promote your own products, but you must advertise Kit Kat.
Actually, we're going to start advertising.
Really? That's great. But I still want guaranteed advertising in the contract.
A few days after getting Kit Kat, Mahler returns to Manhattan to visit Hershey's new ad agency on Madison Avenue. He enters the lobby with a spring in his step, eager to see Hershey's first TV spots. The agency's creative director loads a film into a projector.
First up, the Hershey bar ad.
He turns off the lights, and on the screen, kindergartners feast on Hershey bars as a folksy tune plays.
There's nothing like the face of a kid when he's munching on the greatest taste around. Hershey, the great American chocolate bar.
Next, the ad director cues the Reese's peanut butter cup spot.
People aren't keen on mixing chocolate and peanut butter. They think it's something people in the boondocks would eat. So we're starting by teaching people it's a brilliant combination.
On the screen, two teenagers walk down the street. One's chomping on a chocolate bar. The other's devouring peanut butter right out of the tub. They bump into each other.
Hey, you got chocolate on my peanut butter.
You got peanut butter on my chocolate.
That was good.
It's really good.
Yeah, I like this.
Two great tastes that taste great together. Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. Real milk chocolate. Good old-fashioned peanut butter.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Mahler rises from his chair, clapping.
These are excellent.
In early 1970, the ads hit the air. Sales of Hershey bars jump 30%. But it's the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups ad that surprises everyone. Sales don't rise. They explode. Peanut Butter Cup sales soar 300% in a matter of weeks. The once little-known Reese's is suddenly on the fast track to national success. Shortly after, Hershey's first Kit Kat ads air and turn the British bar into a national bestseller.
Hey, Bob! Look what I've got. Two Kit Kats.
Two what?
Two Kit Kat chocolate bars. One for me and one for you.
Who? Me?
Sure. Outside, it's delicious chocolate. Inside, it's light and crispy and crunchy. Come on, it won't bite you.
It feels like a turning point. After years of decline, Hershey's back. But then, Washington throws a curveball. In August 1971, President Richard Nixon declares war on inflation by freezing all prices and wages. It's a nightmare for Hershey. Cacao bean prices are rising fast, and now the company can't raise prices to protect its profits. But Mars is in a better position. Its bars are mainly nougat or cookie, so it uses less chocolate. Shortly after Nixon's announcement, Mahler calls Hershey's marketing team to his office to deliver shocking news.
We cannot suffer a loss. That's like taking money out of orphans' mouths.
Mahler's not kidding. Most of Hershey's stock is still owned by the orphan school Milton Hershey founded in 1909. If Hershey doesn't deliver profits, the school misses out on millions in dividends. Mahler lets the message sink in, and continues.
So, I'm ending all unnecessary expenditure. That means no more ads, except for Kit Kat, because that's a contractual obligation.
Marketing manager Jack Dowd leaps to his feet.
You can't do that. We're making breakthroughs. This will kill our momentum.
But Mahler's not budging. It's a week later, and in Mars headquarters in McLean, Virginia, Forrest Mars has gathered his top executives together.
Hershey has stopped advertising. This is our chance. I want an all-out attack. Give me the biggest ad push we've ever done. Get our products in the best spots in every store. I don't care about the cost. Do whatever it takes. Give them no quarter.
Motivated by potential bonuses worth up to a third of their annual salary, Mars executives launch a blitzkrieg. TV ads for Mars candy bars fill the airwaves. Mars salespeople fan out across the nation, armed with in-store display materials. Knowing that 70% of candy bars are bought on impulse, they push stores into putting Mars products near cash registers. They also resort to underhand tactics. They win over store managers with free boxes of candy for their kids. They sneakily relocate Reese's Peanut Butter Cups to remote corners of supermarkets and, accidentally knock Hershey bars off the shelves. The cost is huge. But Mars is a private company with no debt and deep pockets. There are no stockholders bleating about quarterly results, and there aren't any bankers poking their noses into the finances either. As far as Forrest is concerned, any losses now are an investment in his candy empire's long-term future. With no ads or sales push from Hershey to stop its advance, Mars steamrolls over its rival. And in fall 1973, Mars shoves Hershey off its throne. After 70 years on top, Hershey's no longer America's leading candy maker. For Forrest, it's a victory that's been 50 years in the making, but that doesn't make it any less sweet. Mars usually ignores the media, but not this time. It makes damn sure the newspapers know that Mars, not Hershey, is the new candy king. Hershey is crumbling fast, and time's running out for it to fight back. On the next episode, Mars battles Hershey on size and price. Hollywood offers Hershey a helping hand, and M&M's gets a reboot.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is episode 4 of Hershey's vs. Mars for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall in Bay Area Sound. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat!
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.